The Committee on Revenue will come to order for May 31, 2017. Colleagues, we've been working here with this long list of bills, trying to figure out what we have ready. Let me just go down the list quickly, and you can see where we are. 2904 needs additional paperwork. It will not be heard today. 3146, ditto. We will be having a conversation on House Bill 2115 because we finally have an amendment, and Representative Greenlick is here and others to discuss that, but I don't expect to move anything today. 2760 is ready, and of course, if it's your pleasure, we'll move it to the floor. 2054 and 2066 are bills or vehicles for use of at the Joint Tax Credit Committee. And so the expectation, or my hope, is that we will move those without recommendation to the Joint Tax Credit Committee. And finally, Senate Bill 845 has a new amendment, which we can discuss if we have time. But the paperwork is not ready on that bill. And that was one, of course, we heard yesterday. Mm-hmm. So with that, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2760. Representative Vance?
Chair, I move House Bill 2760 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Vance moves House Bill 2760 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Kyle, do you want to give us a very quick overview? I think we all know it, but...
Yes, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2760, as a reminder, it's an extension of for 6 years of a property tax exemption that's related to alternative energy systems. There is no fiscal impact. The revenue impact is up there in OLUS, and it's about $3 million up to $4 million per biennium in the coming bienniums. And that's based upon information received from county assessors and tracking in line with what we've seen in the governor's tax expenditure report as well.
And that's revenue property tax revenue.
Property tax revenue, yes, Mr. Chair. Yeah.
Thank you. Discussion? Objection to the motion? Hearing none, it's so ordered. Representative Holvey's bill, I think, and we'll ask him to carry. All right. So we'll close the work session on House Bill 2760 and open a work session on House Bill 2054. Representative Vance?
Sure, I move House Bill 2054 to the floor without recommendation. That's a referral to the Committee on Tax Credits.
Thank you. Representative Vance moves House Bill 2054 without recommendation to the floor and with a request for a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Taxation, on Tax Credits, sorry, the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. Colleagues, this is a potential vehicle for the tax credit bills in the Joint Committee. Any discussion? Any objection? Without objection, it's so ordered. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2054 and open a work session on House Bill 2066.
You have an amendment for this one that made something out.
We do. Oh, all right. Well, we'll open it, and then let's look at the... Well, Chris, do you want to explain what you just said to me? And let's see what we can do with it.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2066, while it's moving, the intent is to move it to JTAX. It also does have a dash one amendment that pulls out a section of the bill. The bill currently is drafted as a technical piece related to the definition of a logger, but then there's also a piece that pertains to the Oregon Greenlight Labor Rebate Program. Mm-hmm. That program has already been was contained in, I think, House Bill 2244 and has moved through the process already. The dash one just removes that to avoid any potential confusion.
Ah, okay. Let's take a quick look at that. Thank you. So this is in aid of avoiding a conflict amendment later.
Yeah, conflict amendment, any kind of confusion and so forth.
All right.
So that if the committee does in fact adopt the dash one, then the bill, when it moves, will just contain a definition pertaining to loggers.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Yeah.
Representative Vance, the dash one.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash one amendments to House Bill 2066.
Thank you. Representative Vance moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 2066. Discussion? Objection to the motion? Hearing none. It is so ordered. Representative Vance?
Chair, I move House Bill 2066 as amended to the floor without recommendation with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits.
Thank you. Representative Bence moves House Bill 2066 as amended to the floor without recommendation and with a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Credits. Any discussion? Any objection to the motion? Hearing none, it is so ordered. Close the work session on House Bill 2066. Open a work session on House Bill 2115. We have a big amendment on that. Do you want to come up, Representative? We have a big amendment on that. Kyle, do you want to give us the brief, and then we'll hear from Representative Greenleck.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2115, yeah, we do have a dash 7 amendment. And I did put in OLIS, rather than just doing the traditional SMS, you'll actually find a meeting material that's just titled Background House Bill 2115 with the dash 7. And it's just a table that really works through the changes in the dash 7. But so I'll just try to hit the high points here. The general concept of 2115 with the dash 7 is it's relating to property of nonprofit hospitals and their affiliated clinics. And what it's doing on in terms of a property tax exemption is it's removing that specified property, so nonprofit hospitals and their affiliated clinics, from the potential to receive exemption under ORS 307-130, which is an existing property tax exemption, the literary, charitable, and scientific organizations exemption, and then puts in place new criteria that the nonprofit hospital organization would have to meet in order to receive a property tax exemption under the new changes going forward. So those are listed up above, and I've numbered them 1, 2, 3, and 4. The key high-level overview would be it's requiring, as I said, it's removing them from the 307-130 statute. The new criteria is a requirement of having a certification from the Oregon Health Authority, and to be certified, that's under the number 3 there, and you have to meet, the hospital organization would have to meet one of those 5 bullets. And it's relating to expenditures, and primarily related to expenditures on community benefits and how those match up with such things as net revenues, how many, what the community benefits were in prior fiscal years, and the such. There is a requirement that OHA would provide county assessors with a list of hospitals and the clinics that have been granted the certification. And then there's a number of other changes in the measure. Some of them related to the statutory definition of community benefits. It's making definitional changes there. Includes some defining of some terms, and then also specifies when the exemption and the changes, the definitional changes, go into effect. So those will be in the 18, 19, or 17, 18 property tax years, and the reporting changes to OHA began 1/1/2018 as well. And that's the really quick overview. Definitely a lot going on. We can go into more detail as needed too.
Representative Greenleck, you have been busy this session.
I've been trying. Thank you, Mr. Chair. State Representative Mitch Greenleck, House District 33. I think that was a great synopsis of where we are with this. The right now, hospitals are basically 501c3 hospitals are basically excluded from property tax. And the purpose of this bill and the whole concept is to move to a community benefit expenditures as a basic part of what the hospital does in their business, and to provide some definition of what a minimum amount of community benefit ought to be to keep their tax-exempt status. I've been working very hard with the Hospital Association and SEIU to try and craft a bill that will be at least acceptable to me and to the two of them. The Dash 7 Amendments gets close to that. It's been worked out, but it turns out there are a couple of pieces in the Dash 7 that are still not completely clear to the hospital, not completely clear to SEIU, and even a piece that it turns out I'm not crazy about either. So I think one more round, a very quick round, I've been sent them very quickly to move in a way that can get at least 2.5 of us behind the bill and one sort of okay about it. And I think we can do that. It's all around the question of a variety of things, but there's some definitions in it that are a little strange. There are some issues about how clinics tie to hospital, what affiliated clinics means. There's the inclusion of a get-out-of-jail-free card for hospitals that have less than a 3% margin. I think that's problematic. We need to do something about that piece. But we will have something for you very quickly, I promise you. We'd like to get this thing moving before it finds some unintended obstacles on the other side of the building or on this side of the building, in fact, where we're sitting. So I appreciate you going along with it. I'd be happy to go back to the original bill, which I think was a great idea, but I don't. That'll make it down to maybe less than one of the three of us behind it.
Thank you.
You'll hear, I think, from the hospital and from SEIU if you're.
Yes, my plan today is to call Drew Hagedorn and Felicia Higgins, and then later Mark Garst and Doug Schmidt on the technical side of the thing. If there are other people you think we should hear from today?
I think that's probably...
That gives us an update. And then I think what you just said is that you're continuing to work on the Dash 8 amendment.
And or maybe 10.
Or the 15 or whatever it is. But we don't have much time, of course, as you know.
I hope we can get it by the end of the week, although right. We're very near the end of the week.
Now. Right, and we do have some questions. Representative Nose?
So, in theory, I'm a sponsor of this bill. And since I'm hearing that the Dash 7 is not going to be acceptable, and just my quick perusal of it, it's kind of complicated, and I'm not sure I understand fully what it's trying to achieve either. Maybe Mr. Hagedorn and Felisa could sort of reveal where the problem points are so we could at least get a little knowledge about that.
That's my plan.
Okay.
That's exactly my plan.
Yeah, yes. A couple of them are technical, a couple of them are substantive.
Okay.
Yes, and I'm hoping that Kyle is going to take some good notes so that we can get this figured out as quickly as we can manage. Anything else for Representative Greenlit? Thank you. You're welcome to stick around if you want in case you have a rebuttal at the end or on with your other business.
I'm supposed to be in the judiciary tomorrow.
You better go. Thank you. Okay, so let's hear from Drew Hagedorn and Felisa Higgins. And let's see if we can get that list of things that Representative Greenlick was referring to.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Felisa Higgins. I'm the political director at SEIU Local 49. So we have some concerns at the Dash 7 that Representative Greenlick alluded to that are some technical concerns. So one of them is that the bill actually moves backwards on our current transparency. The Dash 7s actually move backward on our current transparency, moving to an all systems level reporting instead of an individual hospital reporting. So wanted to make sure that we sort of keep the transparency that we currently have, as well as but additionally, we have agreed with the hospitals to move to a systems level as well. So we understand that.
Okay, that's a bit confusing.
It's a bit confusing. So currently we do hospital by hospital reporting. We have an agreement with the hospitals that what we're looking at is systems reporting. However, to get to that systems level of reporting, you still need to do the individual hospital by hospital reporting. So
sure.
Don't delete all of it,
okay.
Just add the systems portion. And typically hospitals do submit data in a system-wide manner. So that's one of the technical fixes that need to happen. So it doesn't count health professional education and community benefit unless they can link it to the social determinants of health. This is an issue for us as well. And I'm sure the nurses and other folks who represent healthcare professionals in the Oregon Medical Association who now, oftentimes if you're doing training with providers in your hospital clinic, that is an area of community benefit spending that's important. It helps hospitals open up slots, especially in professions where there's a lot of hands-on technical education that you need to do to be certified, and that they can count that as community benefit spending because it costs them more money to train professionals. So clearly we would not want to go backwards on that and their ability to count that as community benefit spending. I'm going to just take a pause after each one of these and feel free to ask me questions as we move forward.
I think that may be, the way to do it.
Okay.
Since I expect to spend whatever time we need on this issue today, I don't think there's anything else that we're going to try to work today. Representative Benz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you go back to your first point
and sure.
Share with us where you're trying to end up? I understand the transparency piece, that is, this hospital is supposed to be doing a certain amount of community benefit. But are you suggesting then that you can't aggregate it and even and thus take a boatload of community benefit in one hospital to offset the dramatic shortage in another?
So, Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz, you can aggregate. So, I believe the agreement that we got to, and Sean Colmer can correct me if I'm wrong, is that you can aggregate under the bill, and Representative Greenlick, this is our understanding, is that you can aggregate by system. However, if one facility in a system is not meeting the minimum of the 6% that we agreed to, then that facility, there's kind of a look back provision, and the assessors will address that issue when they come up, because that look back provision in the Dash 7s is also one of the technical changes that we have to fix. But the concept is, across the system, you have to meet a 6% minimum community benefit that aggregates all the clinics and the hospitals. However, if one hospital in that system is at least not meeting the minimum of the 6%, then something will be done about that.
Thank you. Did you want to weigh in on that?
Sure. For the record, Sean Colmer, Hospital Association, not Drew Hagedorn. I'm not nearly as well-dressed, so thank you for letting me come up. I think we have
agreement. I noticed that he changed appearance.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me come up. I think we do have agreement on system-level reporting. I think it is still a conversation about what you do, to Felisa's point, about individual hospitals. We totally support transparent reporting by hospital like it exists today, so we wouldn't want to go backwards on that, but I think that's also a piece of the technical issues we've got to work through, and some of the policy issues we've got to work through still on this bill. And if you take nothing from this conversation today, we're still committed to sitting down and working through some of these issues, and we're hopeful that we can be at least part of that 2.5 that the representative mentioned earlier, but we're willing to put our shoulder into it in this process. So thanks for the time.
Thank you. And my expectation is that you'll work with Representative Greenlick to figure this out. And if Greenlick comes and says we can't figure it out, then I'll count noses on any particular issue, and we'll do it that way. Okay. Other questions, Representative Benz?
Follow up. I think you alluded to the penalty, but you didn't say what it was.
Yes. Chair Barnhart, Representative Benz. Yes, so the penalty in the current bill, which I think that Doug Schmidt from the assessors will also address, is so currently right now what it is that you then assess the property tax value and decide which is greater, and that then, or I'm sorry, you assess the property tax value, and if the property tax value is greater than the community benefit spending, then you say that they have to pay the property tax. However, this is a challenge for the assessors, for hospitals that could potentially float in and out of the 6%. So I didn't lay out the penalty because we're not sure we can implement the penalty, and that's the technical piece that we need to go back and take a look at.
It sounds like a great deal more work for somebody. I'm going to guess the assessors.
It is a great deal more work for the assessors because they currently do not assess nonprofits, period.
And so the obvious question, who pays?
Representative Barnhart, Representative Benz. I am not the expert on how tax assessors get paid in this state.
We'll ask Doug Schmidt
that
question.
Doug will come up and answer that question.
Chair Martin. Maybe it's a...
Representative Knopf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It may be that it's a better question for Doug Schmidt, but do we anticipate that this bill is going to remove more properties from the tax rolls? Is that a possibility? I don't think it was an initial goal of the bill, but is it an outcome that's likely to happen?
Representative Barnhart, Representative Knopf, I think that we actually have to clarify that's another issue in the bill currently, is that what is a medical facility? So I think right now, for example, some hospitals pay on their administrative buildings. I think the intent is that they would continue to pay on those administrative buildings, if I'm correct in our intention. And then... But then figure out how the medical buildings, that's a mixed. So it's a it's a question.
So maybe.
Maybe. I have a lot of really firm answers for the committee right now.
I'm not going to study the Dash 7 super closely because I think it's going to change.
I do have some other technical issues. I'm not sure
let me
we'd want to
sure
keep going through them.
Yeah, Representative Johnson, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't
deal in the healthcare arena very frequently, but I'm just wondering, as you talk about community benefits and reporting and so forth, it also talks about is related to the social determinants of health.
Yes.
Are you guys in agreement about what that means? Is that a black and white issue, or is it also to be determined?
Representative Barnhart, Representative Johnson, the social determinants of health is a pretty standard term that's now used in the healthcare industry to look at the field of work that impacts a person's overall health. And so we, the Northwest Health Foundation, brought the amendment forward. Both the Hospital Association, SEIU, and the other folks that we're working with on the bill agreed that this, we need to look at the total health impacts, and folks should get rewarded for working with communities to implement those. Hospitals and counties actually currently do a sort of assessment of what those community benefits are, and so there is a tool that can be used about where investment should go.
Okay. Good, thanks. Roxanne Pence.
Mr. Chair, and to take it full circle, so social, economic, and environmental would include law enforcement, fixing the streets, sewer, and all the other normal attributes of a government, including assessment costs.
Representative Barnhart, Representative Bentz, I think that is a little bit broader than the social determinants of health. So a community benefit impact report looks at some of those key areas. Law enforcement actually is one of those key areas. I know the OIA has actually done some work to look at the population health of their inmates, for no better term, to look at them and look at their what families they're going back to, what is their social living conditions, economic conditions, and what helps prevent recidivism. And so some of those things could be looked at and included. I know that when you think of other population health examples, there's a ton about, we talk about investing in schools. Kaiser invests in a program called Playworks in the Portland Public Schools, which, you know, there's been a lot of cuts to school programs. So providing PE out and outdoor physical activity, which they have seen dramatic decreases in childhood obesity in the schools where they have these programs. That's probably a more concrete social determinant of health.
Please, yeah.
Well, just to be contrary, does this bill properly belong before this revenue committee, or would it be better in ways and means, since we're busy spending that money, by defining this social determinative thing?
Representative Barnhart, Representative Bentz, I think this bill does belong in this committee because there was a work group about this committee and the assessments and what is the responsibility of nonprofits to paying their taxes.
Yes,
I served on the work group.
I remember.
Right, and so I'm just struck by the longer you try to make an apple into an orange, the more challenging it becomes. And so here we are deep into the mess. So anyway.
Is there a question?
I'm trying to read where you're going with this.
Yeah, well.
I might agree with you, but I don't understand.
Yeah. So the question I would ask, You guys must have accepted the design of community benefit for all the reasons we heard months ago and for all the reasons we heard throughout the course of the summer. Apparently, there's no escaping it. So we're going to be in here redefining all of these things, which already exist in the real world of taxation and spending. But here we are. And so I'm just struck by the work we're doing to try to do work that's already been done, had we just chosen to call this what it should be. It's really a comment. And so I look forward to the next amendment, but not necessarily the work that is going to go with it. So.
I think maybe we better move on to the next point, whatever that is.
Yeah. Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, thank you. I think we'll take that into consideration. I guess I understand exactly what you're saying. It would be simpler to just say everybody pays their taxes. That is not the situation that we're currently in. Hmm. On page 4, section 3.3D, it exempts hospitals with less than a 3% operating margin. I think that what we're trying to figure out here is what happens to hospitals who are not making a margin. We don't agree with an exemption for a 3% operating margin, but we do understand the point that there are some hospitals who are financially in the red and that need to be protected in our state and could not afford to pay their property taxes even if they were assessed. But they should be able to keep their doors open. So we're going to work on that in the work group to try to figure out that issue. I think that those are my comments, although there are additional comments from the assessors and the Department of Revenue that I think will follow, that they'll have much more detail about that we need to also fix.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Chair Barnhart, a couple of things to add to Felisa's comments. I think the biggest one at this point, I think, is the, and you heard earlier, sort of the system versus hospital and a clinic piece, and it gets incredibly complicated, as we've seen in this Dash 7 amendment. So I think that's part of the thing that we're going to have to sort of work through and roll our sleeves up a little bit to see if we can get to a place of agreement. But that's part of our biggest concern in the Dash 7s. We also want to make sure we're not redefining things that have been well established and defined both federally and in our state for a long time. That's going to create sort of reporting issues at a minimum for our members. And we want to make sure that they know very clearly what we're reporting and what we're not. So that's another one of our big concerns. But I think, again, at the end, we're willing to sit down with Felisa and others and the assessors to think through how we hopefully get to a place of agreement. So more to come.
We also have, I'm sorry, Representative Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, we also have one more very important technical fix that I forgot to mention. So on the 10% increase of the year before, that actually should be 110% increase from the year before, as opposed to going, dropping back down. So
I'm sorry, what? Where is that?
That's in Section 4, 3.3B.
Section 4.
So right now, as it's drafted, it looks like you only have to spend 10% of what you did 2 years ago. And so I think it's meant to say that it grew by 10%. So let's say you're not meeting the 6% threshold, but then you have a growth. That growth should be counted so that you're on your way to meeting the expectations.
I gotcha. So there's a one missing.
Yes.
920. All right. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense this way, does it? All right. Anything else today?
Not from us.
No, sir.
I would like to have a kind of a brief understanding of what the structure of this general thing is that we're coming to today. I know I didn't mention that in our conversations in the hall during session this morning. But as I look through this quickly, it appears to me that it's quite different from what we started with. Could somebody give us the sort of the thumbnail of where we're headed with this amendment?
Sure, Representative Barnhart, members of the committee. I think that where we're trying to get to is we're looking at 2047, which was the clinic exemption bill, and then 2115, which was the hospital exemption bill. The Hospital Association has brought this issue forward that many of the clinic exemptions are wrapped up in health systems. This is the issue that we brought forward earlier in the work group. What we're trying to do is combine both of those bills.
Yeah.
To be one bill on how health systems will report and be accountable to their community benefit or to the taxpayers. And that's where we're trying to head towards. And so the merger of those two issues into one bill, setting a minimum floor and streamlining reporting, is why I think the amendment is so complicated and the challenges that there are in the current amendment. That also addresses trying to address the assessor's issues of which facilities are taxable under property tax assessment and which aren't, so that there's the clear bright line for them, so they know when they go out, they get a certification from OHA that says this facility you're going to assess, this facility you don't have to assess, which gets to Representative Bence's point about how assessors are spending their time in the field. If you're assessing properties that you're never going to collect property taxes on, that's a waste of money. And so that's what we're trying to merge together here, and that's where we're going.
Don't you want to be on the work group again?
let me try a little more. I get the impression that the way this thing is put together, it's assumed that facilities are taxable unless they meet these criteria, which will then be certified to by OHA. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I got
that. That's correct.
That's the general framework you're trying to work from. Okay. Any questions on please go ahead.
And I think, Jared Barnhart, where we're trying to get to is a very clear and transparent expectation in our communities around community benefit. We've had a very transparent system for a long time on reporting. Mm. And I think what you've heard from us and you heard when we were here almost 3 or 4 months ago, a clear expectation now about what community benefit spend happens in those communities. And hopefully through this process, we can get to a place where we all can agree. But that's what we're hoping to get to make sure that we can do that in our communities.
Okay.
Yep.
It does occur to me that if you're successful in working a bill like this, you end up with a better community awareness of what the hospital or the system is doing to promote health in the community, and thus insulate you from rapacious taxers like me. It's not a bad approach if you can pull it off. Let's see. Anything else for this panel? Should we go on to the technical guys? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Much. Don't be terribly surprised if you get emails in the middle of the night from me saying, here's another question I hadn't thought of. Okay, tax guys. Mark Garst, Doug Schmidt, please. Yes. Please tell the Polk County Commissioners that we're very pleased to have you here.
We are, usually.
Yeah. Whether we like what you have to say or not.
Okay. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Douglas Schmidt, Polk County Assessor, testifying for Association of, OSACA. Forgot what we were. There were some things that have come up in testimony, and I'll cover those. The one thing this bill does is it takes the qualifying criteria out of the hands of the assessors and puts it in the Oregon Health Authority, which is fine, but we do have some concerns about some of the other issues in the bill. One of them being we had thought that we're back to the system now, it sounds like. Where in the previous bill and some of the committees or some of the work groups, we were trying to separate those out into the clinics would have to qualify on their own versus the hospital qualifying. So right now what's happening is hospitals are buying up for-profit clinics and turning around and asking them to be exempt, even though nothing has changed. And because they're owned by a hospital, it's almost impossible to not make them exempt. This bill continues that. Okay, so that's fine as long as that's the intent and the policy of the legislature, that if a hospital buys up a for-profit clinic, they can incorporate that into their whole nonprofit system. So that was one of the things we just wanted to make sure was clear, that is the intent of this bill is to do that, because they're doing that now. The other issue was there's a couple of provisions in there that talk about using a property tax as a qualifier for an exemption. We weren't quite sure what that meant. There's a little bit of clarification that's come out. We do put value on exempt property. We do that. We just don't necessarily keep a MAV, and we don't apply any taxes to that. Plus, like testimony has been given already, we try and allocate our resources where the taxes are going to be generated. We're going to put a value on a hospital, but we may just do a simple cost approach. We don't look at any market, any income, things like that. We don't send out personal property returns to nonprofit organizations because they're not accessible. So we have a hospital in Polk County that just did a major expansion to include an MRI. We don't know what the value of that MRI equipment because mm-hmm. it's exempt. It's owned by the hospital. We do tax leased property on exempt organizations, but not the owned property because most leased equipment does not meet the requirement of a below market rent. So we make those taxable. So the issue of using the tax the taxes that were abated as a qualifier for a community development amount, a community benefit amount, our tax value and taxes on those properties will probably be low, which may allow an organization to qualify for an exemption that maybe they shouldn't have. And I heard testimony that in a system, in a hospital system, there could be a hospital that doesn't meet the community benefit social determinants of health requirements, and they would then not be exempt, which means they would be taxable. We would then have to go in and tax that, assess that hospital, which could take us weeks to do a major appraisal on a hospital. Just to have it turned around, and because the taxes are less than the community benefit that they are giving, then it's now exempt. So there's got to be a way to keep assessors from having to revalue these floating hospitals or medical clinics. Are medical clinics part of that? Do they have to meet the individual requirement for a clinic of community benefit? That wasn't stated. It was just talked about the hospital. So the work that would put on the assessors, if this bill goes in and the floating in and out of hospitals, now, ideally, this would incentivize them to meet that community benefit level so that they wouldn't go in and out. But there could be issues in talking with the Felisa earlier. You know, they may budget for a certain amount of community benefit, but something happens and they don't meet it. So then that means they wouldn't qualify the next year. So that gives us a lot of concern on how the tax part of this is used as a qualifier to grant or not grant an exemption on a hospital, and the fact that typically when you look at a large major property that it's exempt, it's not coming in and out of exemption. We don't, you know, public schools, they don't float in and out, they're exempt. Large major hospitals up until now have, once they've gotten that exemption, they're typically exempt. So this is different, and it's going to cause us some additional work to administer this. We don't know how much, but it is a concern to us what might happen. And then the fact that value can be appealed. If they don't like the value that we put on it, they could appeal it. And if it gets low enough, then maybe they could then qualify based on the taxes that lower value would generate. So there were let me just look at some notes I was taking here. I think for right now, this is a policy issue for the committee and the legislature, but it does seem like I haven't seen any specific definitions of social determinants of health. They're claimed to be out there, but in the bill, it's a very high-level definition. And is that going to cause confusion amongst the people who are reporting? What amount of social determinant of health do they have to meet? We're moving away from the true charity definition on this. That is a policy decision, but I do want to bring that up because it opens up a whole lot of, to me, vagueness that maybe the people in the industry know what that is and they can better define it, but I haven't seen that definition yet. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to try and answer them.
Questions? Questions for Mr. Schmidt. I have a couple of thoughts, and maybe we should hear from Mark first, though, before I don't really have specific questions for you.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Mark Garst with the Department of Revenue Property Tax Division. Just saw the amendments yesterday, so got to forgive me if things are a little disjointed. I'm going to walk through the actual Dash 7 amendment and just give some technical concerns that have jumped out at us.
Please.
And then just make sure that a couple of the policy questions that are answered by the bill are clear, so you know what it is that you're doing. So first of all, in Section 1 of the bill, this is page 1, line 10s, it will allow for affiliated clinics. And so that was really the question that we were trying to answer with the bill. When we started the 130 work group, one of the things that jumped out at folks was that nonprofit hospitals were purchasing for-profit clinics and then bringing them in under that umbrella and making them exempt. So this definitely kind of expands that, in that it allows it. It says that as long as the system is making, you know, is meeting the limit as far as community benefit, then those clinics will be exempt. Here in Section 1, it says that those hospitals can be, or that those clinics rather, can be operating under the trademark of a nonprofit hospital or the parent company of a nonprofit hospital. So the clinics themselves can be for profit. So just a policy decision, and I just want to make sure that was clear to you. Down a little bit further in Section 1. Nonprofit is defined for those clinics that are nonprofit, and it says that, and this is line 16, is organized not for profit pursuant to ORS Chapter 65, and then it goes on to say, or it can be a 501c3. We think that the assessor will be responsible for determining whether or not the clinic is operating under ORS Chapter 65. So, just something to make you aware of. If you only had it under 501c3, that would be more clear and would avoid potential litigation down the road.
And what is Chapter 65?
That is the Oregon Nonprofit Corporation Statutes. So it would give them an alternative.
Isn't that normal language?
Not sure about that. So moving on, down at the bottom of page 2, it says in sub 2, we would ask that you add upon compliance with ORS 307-162 to the beginning of that. And that just basically says that as long as they do an application under the normal forms, then they're eligible to receive this exemption. That's just some language that's consistent with other exemption statutes, and we would like to see it here. But going on and looking at what that paragraph does, it says that those clinics and hospitals would be, unless they are otherwise exempt property taxation under ORS Chapter 307, they shall be exempt if they meet these standards. So we just want to get on the record, first of all, that later in the bill it says directly that these nonprofit hospitals and their affiliated clinics may not qualify under 307-130. So we wouldn't want anybody to be confused and think that had you qualified under 307-130, which is obviously part of Chapter 307, that you can continue to claim that exemption. We think that exemption would be denied in the future, and we think that this language is here to pick up like OHSU or property of health districts, property that's exempt under a different statute, 307-090. We just want to make sure that the big picture here is that we're carving these folks out of 307-130 entirely. Moving on to the end of Section 1, it says that they have to have received this certificate from the Oregon Health Authority. We just like to put a time limit on there just to say that it was maybe the most recent reporting period, just so that someone wouldn't think that just because they received a certificate 3 years ago means that they still get to be exempt today. So they have to get a certificate in the most recent reporting period. Making
good notes.
Okay. Moving on. Section 2 looks good. Section 3, and this is to Representative Bence's question. This is, so now I'm at the bottom of page 3. It says that they have to improve the social determinant of health in the community. And so the question then is just, as Bence described, what is that community exactly? And we imagine that what it means is wherever the health system is operating is what they're considering to be the community. I can give you the worst case scenario. We have a hospital in Boise that owns clinics in Malheur County. And so they could do all the community benefit in Boise. The way the language is written today, and then this clinic in Malheur County would be exempt. So, but it could cross county lines. The clinics could be in different cities than the hospitals. So the bill as it's written right now does not address the concern that was raised earlier by Felisa, and that is that they want each clinic to do some, to meet some standard. That's not currently in the bill. Moving on to page four. On line seven, it says that for the prior fiscal year, the hospital or affiliate clinics, this is like a reporting requirement. We think that that or is just there because there may only be a hospital, there may only be a clinic. The way it's written now, they would just need to report for the whole system, and so it doesn't meet what was described as the intent of the bill. And then down in line 10, we have a problem with the first year. It says that they have to report the property tax assessed on the property that is exempt under Section 1 of this Act. Well, as Doug described, there's never really been any property assessed. And so in that first year, I don't know exactly how you would treat that or if new property comes on. I think that what the language wants to say is what the property tax that would have been assessed. But that would even be a problem in the first year. Down a little bit further is the 110% issue that's already been discussed. And then there's the issue that Doug raised, and this is in line 23, where you weigh the total community benefits versus whatever tax savings there is. Now, if you just took out this C here on page 4, line 23, I think that that would ease the burden on the assessors quite a bit, because then they wouldn't have to do this figuring every year of what taxes would have otherwise been charged. If you're going to keep this language, at the very least, it needs to be an estimate, because the assessor's not going to rerun the roll just for this property to get the perfect compression and bonds and all that. And you have to recognize that a lot of these may be on the roll quite low. So when you say how much taxes have they saved, they may actually be saving quite a bit more in taxes if the assessor were to put more work into the appraisal of these properties. Moving on, so my final comments are on the last page, page 6. So on line 5, this is just a change to the base bill, and what the introduced version of the bill did in what was Section 6 and now becomes Section 7 is it makes this exemption available to leased property. Leased property, typically, you apply once, and then it's exempt for the term of the lease. So you don't have to continue to reapply every year. Here we have an annual reporting, and so it probably makes sense that you would look at that annual reporting every year, even for the leased property, mm-hmm. and if it becomes taxable in any given year, also the leased property should be taxed. So just to correct that. And then the final thing that I would bring up is down in the applicability and effective dates, it's possible that there may be a timing issue in there, and that if the changes to 307.130 were to be effective 91 days after signee die, or even operative on January 1 of 18, then there's a question as to whether or not the property should be, you know, it should come out of exemption right at that point in time. And so even if they would qualify under the new standards, there would be this period where they should come out of the exemption. And we certainly don't think that that's the intent here. If the hospital's already meeting this community benefit requirement, we think that the goal would be that they would continue to receive it seamlessly as this new exemption takes hold. And so we would just want to make sure that there is not an issue there. So those are my concerns, and happy to take any questions.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart?
Yes, please.
Members, may I make a comment?
Yes.
The part that I didn't fully explain why some of the issues with property tax concern us. On page 1, line 20, it says that all real or personal property owned or being purchased. Okay, so that means they own it, which if they own it, it's probably now exempt. The comment was made that we assume that these are taxable unless they're exempt. Well, most hospitals right now are exempt. Then you get into the qualifying criteria. So if we assume that even if they own it, it should have a taxable value and a tax on that, because later on page 4, lines 23 through 25, it says that the total expenditures are weighed against the property tax. So this isn't, the way I read this, it's not just for properties that came out of exemption that we now value, but we're going to have to do this on properties that are currently now taxable, I mean exempt, because it says all properties owned by. So it's, again, it's just another concern that even if it is exempt right now, we still may have to do a full-blown court defendable value appraisal on these properties, even though they're exempt.
Do you think the department is correct that if C on 23, 24, and 25 of page 4 were removed, that that would reduce the issue you're talking about or not?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, that would help, yes. But there's still an issue that I have with what I heard in testimony that some hospitals may float in and out of exemption based on their community benefit reporting. So we would still have to value it, but that would remove a big portion, I believe, of the concerns that we have at this time. I would have to maybe talk with a couple other assessors, get their opinion, but I think that would help.
That also becomes a penalty then, doesn't it? In effect, you end up spending money twice, some on an inadequate community benefit, inadequate to meet your requirement, and then you also pay the property tax as well, if I understand the way this system works, if C is omitted.
Chair Barnhart, C is another method that they might qualify for,
yes,
to meet the standard. So they, right, could do a number of things. They could do total expenditures on community benefits equal to 6% of the net patient revenue. That's A. B, they could do community benefits in excess of, and it should be 110% of what they did yesterday. In other words, ramp it up. They could do C, which is the weighing the property taxes versus, they can do D, that's the net operating margin of 3% that some concerns were expressed about on the previous panel. And then there's E, which is good cause to be determined by OHA if they didn't meet the standard for another reason. So there are a number of paths for them to qualify. And this, if you were to take out C, it would eliminate one of them. And it would, yes, if they yes, didn't qualify under any of those standards, then they would come back onto the roll. And I think that's the entire point of the bill, is to hold them to a certain standard,
right,
that they, so that they have predictability, they know what they have to meet, and if they do that, then both the hospital and the clinics are exempt. And if I could just add one thing.
Please.
If you took out that C, there's still a reporting requirement on behalf of the companies, and that's in line 10 on the part of the hospitals, where they have to report the total property taxes that, I think it should say, would have otherwise been assessed. Right. But you could ease that by saying an estimate of the taxes that would have otherwise been assessed or something along those lines. But that is, there still would be a second requirement for the assessor to do some of that work.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I hope by my testimony that I've given over these last on this bill and several others that we don't value property correctly. We believe we do value property correctly. We just try and apply our resources where it's going to benefit the districts, and that is in taxable property. So we have to keep values for exempt property. We do have values on every single exempt property in the county. It's just that we don't put the time and effort into them because, for one thing, they don't generate any revenue to the districts, and they are probably not going to be appealed because there is no tax, so they are not aggrieved. So we have to have a value. So I don't want you to think that we're not doing our job. We can value these properties. It's just the times that we have to do it and for what cause. And that's the concern we have.
Thank you. Questions that these issues have generated. I have a comment, and it may be a comment for the negotiators. You're worried about this floating in and out business. One year we're exempt, next year we're not. Mm-hmm. The year after that we are, and so forth. I'm wondering if you could use a 5-year moving average or something of these indicators rather than having it 1 year. I mean, 1 year, you're really good. You've done a really great job. You've you've spent a lot of money in the community. The next year is not so good. The year after that is sort of okay, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And you're on a five-year moving average. Then, if you become taxable, it's going to be because you messed up on this community benefit piece several times, probably. Or you were skirting the edge of the line and fell off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that something like that would make a difference to you and your ability to actually do these assessments or not.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I think that's a valid point because I think the concern maybe in the writers of the bill was that there could be a year that something happened at the hospital and they just could not meet that. And if that's the case, but they've been meeting it every other year, should they be penalized by becoming taxable and creating more work? And I think that's a valid point that should be looked at.
That reduces the likelihood of a good cause criteria.
That's very possible, too.
Because obviously if you've had some good years, you're doing fine, and then you have a fire, something happens, you can't meet it again for the next year. But you're back again the year after that, then if we're using moving average, for example, you'd never get to the point where you were at jeopardy and therefore had to ask for a good cause exemption. I'm making that mm-hmm. up. I don't know whether that's a useful mm-hmm. suggestion or mm-hmm. not, but it might be something for the negotiators to talk mm-hmm. about. My last comment today is that I think if I understood them correctly, I think the criteria in the other bill, the bill number 20, the other bill.
2047.
Having to do with the clinics.
Medical.
Mm-hmm. I think those criteria were more certain and less subject to interpretation and less likely to pit for-profit independent clinics against affiliated clinics when it comes to differential costs. In this case, we're talking about property taxes. I would hope the negotiators, when they look at this again, will take into account Ms. Hagan's concern about aggregating everything versus separating them out. And I believe that the criteria in the other bill, which makes it clear that the clinics that are exempt are the ones that have very specialized purposes that are charitable in nature entirely in their purpose. The federally qualified clinics and I think a couple of the other clinics that are obviously for low-income people where the chances of actually making money are pretty limited. It's a charity in the real old-fashioned sense. And that all the other clinics affiliated or independent would be subject to the tax, so that there wouldn't be any differentiation between an independent doctor's office and a doctor's office that's connected to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to me to be a much clearer, bright line and easier one to administer, and would result in these different clinics that, to the uninitiated coming to the door, look exactly like each other. So whatever that comment is worth, I have no idea whether anyone else on the committee agrees with me about that or not, but that's my hit on a policy issue, which I think I think your explanation of what this bill does is useful for that. Representative Buehler, please.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. Gentlemen, I greatly respect your expertise, and I appreciate the feedback. How long have you had time to vet this piece of legislation?
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I saw this bill this morning when I came to work, or this amendment, excuse me. So I've had just a couple hours to come up with thoughts and concerns on this amendment.
And Chair Barnhart, Representative Buehler, we were included after the initial bill came out in a meeting, and so our old concerns are taken care of, but we didn't see the dash 7 until yesterday, so now we have a new set of concerns, unfortunately.
So that creates a whole set of concerns to me that this is a very complex piece of legislation, and the two people who have intimate knowledge of our tax system is being rushed through this process. I think that's a big concern.
Yeah.
These have profound implications for a lot of people with this piece of legislation.
Yeah, thank you. And I will admit to similar thoughts a few minutes ago. Representative Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If we just kept you completely out of this and shifted the entire penalty portion over to the Oregon Health Authority, how would you design the penalty?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, are you talking about if they lose the exemption, or would they remain non-assessable? Would they remain taxable, and there would be a penalty through OHA?
So, if I may, here's how I read what they're doing. Mm-hmm. The suggestion here is that the activities that create the amount of the activity that you must engage in community benefit is going to be turned over to the Oregon Health Authority to sort out.
Yes.
And they'll then determine if they meet the 6% level. But if they don't, then they get to be taxed, and now it's on you. And the penalty, of course, is supposedly they have to pay the tax, and you'll go do all the work necessary to impose upon them the tax that this other entity has determined they don't have to pay. You get it. We've divided the thing up. So, okay, let's divide it completely and keep you guys out of it completely. What would we do to them to make this less of a tax? What I find interesting is we're doing everything here to make this a tax, but not. So I wonder if Measure 5 applies. I mean, seriously, you look at this, you go, well, what we're even designing how they have to spend the money, but we're not calling it a tax. Until it comes time to enforce it, then suddenly we have to expose them to you guys' efforts, and thus it's a tax. Okay, so I'm just saying, let's carry it a little further and have you guys tell us what it should be if we just take it out of the tax venue and just make them what? That's why I'm asking you. And that's why I was mentioning to the chair earlier, this is not a new approach. This is what they did back in England. We had the church courts and we had the law courts. That's what we're creating here, two parallel systems. And it just doesn't work. And our struggle with it so illustrates. But as long as I don't want you to spend much time on this, because I fear that we can't escape our tax system, but we're busily designing a little avenue around it. Except when it comes to enforcing it, then we're looking at you.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, I have a hammer, and this looks like a nail. To me, they should be taxable if they don't meet the standards for the exemption. And I'm sure it's a lack of imagination, but that is how I see it.
Please, I'm not sure how fruitful the conversations are going to be, but go ahead. Let's see what happens.
I'm happy for that answer. But why would you want to give up then the standards that just say whether or not they're within or without the taxi system? Why do you want to turn that over to the OHA?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, I truly believe that the OHA is in a better position to actually determine, first of all, what that community benefit should mean. There's so much literature. They did policy hearings down the hall that were super informative, but way over my head, and talked about what those social determinants of health should be. And I feel like those are the people who are better suited to determine whether or not the hospitals are doing something that entitles them to an exemption.
Follow up, just to be mean, Mr. Chair, then you would, of course, suggest to them in those hearings that one of the most important elements of what we're about is that you guys get paid for the enforcement piece of this mechanism.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Bentz, no, I happily sat on my hands in those hearings. So.
Okay.
All right. Anything else? Colleagues, given the little bit of time that they've had to look at this, I wouldn't be at all surprised that Kyle or Dr. Werner get some emails saying, oops, we forgot about this issue. With that proviso, I thank you very much for having studied quickly. I never realized that the ability to cram before exams would turn out to be a useful skill later, but it obviously is. Anything else on this bill today? Obviously, we're not moving it. Thank you. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2115. Paul, has the status of 845 changed at all? It hasn't. All right. I'm going to open the work session just for the purpose of announcing what I'm working on. So we'll open the work session on Senate Bill 845. Colleagues, I've asked for an amendment to the bill that would reinstate the original percentage of the marijuana tax that goes to the schools, maintaining the change that that require that it goes to the state school fund or a corollary of the state school fund rather than to the common school fund, but it would restore the 40% to the K-12 system and remove the 10% to community colleges. It gets us back closer to what the initiative contained as a distribution. I just want to let you know that, and so we can talk about that later. But we don't have the paperwork today. Unless somebody wants to discuss that issue right now, would be useful. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned a corollary to the state school fund. What might that be?
Well, my recollection is that this bill sets up the marijuana taxation fund, and that's not the exact name, but it's a.
I think you just used the common school fund initially.
Well, no, actually, it does set up this fund called Kyle? It's called the marijuana tax fund, isn't it? And in that tax fund are all these sub accounts, and in each case the reference is to a distribution of the fund in the way the fund would be spent if it were part of this other fund, in this case the state school fund, but it's actually coming out of the marijuana fund.
Okay, I'll look in that.
Did I understand that correctly?
Marijuana account. Yeah.
Their marijuana account is what it's called. Yeah, I think it's a detail without a difference. I don't know that it matters to the Ways and Means people. I'm sorry that Representative Smith isn't here, but I don't think it matters to us. Yeah. Anything else? All right. So we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 845. And colleagues, when we get the paperwork, we'll talk some more about that issue. And there isn't any other business today, is there? Oh, tomorrow morning, 8:30, we'll be meeting with the Senate members of the Joint Committee on Tax Reform. I'll see you all then. Thank you. Committee's adjourned.